Ladies and gentlemen, rev up your engines and get ready for the deal of a lifetime. Jim K. Ford is proud to announce the 2023 Ford F-150 Clearout Sale, the event you've been waiting for. For a limited time only, Jim K. Ford is offering unbeatable discounts, jaw-dropping financing options, and mind-blowing trade-in deals. Don't miss out on the 2023 Ford F-150 Clearout Sale at Jim K. Ford, 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans, or jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln,
we say yes!
Welcome to the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast with Steve Warren and the coach, Greg Kennedy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. We appreciate you being here and continuing to participate in the program, whether it's an email to say, enjoying the show, liked what you said, or maybe some commentary about what you'd like to hear us talk about here on the program. By the way, you can do that anytime you like. SensNationPodcast@outlook.com. It is Steve Warren along with the coach, Greg Kennedy. Coming up today, the three-game winning streak comes to a big, loud, crashing end with a 7-2 loss to the Carolina Hurricanes. But they, you know, since the last time we got together, they also had some good stuff in there as well. Brady Tkachuk with a hat trick and a win over the Islanders. And NHL general manager meetings are on right now, so we'll talk about that too. Greg, how are you today?
I'm good, Steve. Thanks for asking. It's you and I actually saw each other today during the day. That doesn't happen very often. Nice little chat. And you know what I was thinking? Somebody complained to me the other day, said every time we do this little beginning of the show thing, I always bring up the weather. And I feel like I'm going to do it again, Steve. To me, it felt like today was worse than any day in all of February.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Okay.
For sure. But the golden rule of podcasting is they say, try not to talk about anything that's happening, you know,
and
in the immediate moment, right? You know, Sorry, it's okay though. It's a sports podcast. Let's be honest. Each episode is only good for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 days before people are on to other subjects. But we do try to keep it as evergreen as possible, as they say. But I agree with you. Yeah, February was pretty damn good. And I suspect this will be temporary.
Yes.
At least I hope.
How was your St. Paddy's Day?
I didn't do a whole lot. I had my wife and I played some euchre with another couple here at the house. So had a few Heinekens, had a bunch of finger food, and dominated the ladies in euchre. So all in all, I thought it was a pretty good St. Paddy's Day. I'm not really down with the pounding many, many green beers in public and getting crazy anymore. How about you?
Yeah, no, I'm the same way, Steve. We had a quiet Sunday together. It was nice.
Nice.
I did have a couple of Jameson. I like my Irish whiskey, but other than that, it was a. I am a Kennedy though, so I am Irish. But no, it was a quiet one this year. It's kind of different when it's on a Sunday.
It's funny how we all celebrate this Irish holiday, right? There's, you know, like I'm half Scottish, for example, right? My grandmother's Scottish. My mom was Scottish, and Robbie Burns Day. I don't celebrate it, and certainly nobody. I mean, certainly some people celebrate it, but. To the degree of St. Paddy's Day, and I can't think of another holiday like it. It's uniquely Irish, but everybody's down with it. Drinking and partying, why not?
Well, I think we're not Leaf fans, and we don't discuss the Leafs, but how do you feel about the Leafs when they wear their Toronto St. Pat's jerseys or the Blue Jays? Every Major League Baseball team wears their green hats. I think it's kind of cool when the Leafs dig out the St. Pat's stuff every year. It's a throwback, and I enjoy that from a historical perspective.
Yeah, it's fine. I appreciate anything that's a reprieve, a respite from having to look at the blue, you know, the blue team for a long time. I couldn't even say the words Toronto Maple Leafs. I could only go with the blue team. And so there's really no emotions connected to the white and green St. Paddy's Day uniform. So I'm fine with it. It's kind of interesting. We're really getting off topic here out of the gate, but I'll at least steer it to hockey in that I guess because Carolina played the Leafs in the white and green that the Leafs had on, I guess they, because they wore blacks, they wanted to wear blacks again against the Sens on Sunday night. And so the Sens wore their road whites. Now, you and I are of a certain vintage. It took us probably, I don't want to speak for you, but it took some getting used to when the Gary Bettman's NHL decided to flip-flop things. Because when we were growing up, it was always white at home, darks on the road, and then they changed it around. And so, really, Sunday night was kind of a blast from the past at Canadian Tire Center for guys like us.
I think all home teams should always wear white, and I'll tell you why. If you are a Senators season ticket holder, every single game you go to is white against black. The road team's in white, right. The home team's in black. Every single game you go to is a chess match or a checkers game. If the home team, in this case the Senators, are wearing their white at home, you see all those colorful road jerseys of everybody else, right? That I think that's the way it should be, instead of having to watch white versus black every single game.
Yeah, I mean, that growing up, it was Habs wearing white at the Forum, Leafs wearing white at Maple Leaf Gardens, and that was our Saturday night. And that's it. I was annoyed by it just because of tradition, but I hadn't really thought about that angle. That's a good point. Do you know why they actually did decide to flip-flop things initially?
I have no idea. But it's not the first time. In the 60s, teams wore dark at home. The NFL was dark at home. I honestly have no idea. There's no any rhyme or reason to it. But yeah, the change came about. I don't know if it came about with exactly when Bettman came in, but at some point in time, they switched over, and I've never been a fan of it. I just, white is home, and for the exact reason I stipulated. I just, the colorful jerseys of the NHL, any sports team, I like seeing the colors, and you just don't get to see them because you're watching the visitor in white all the time.
Yeah, and it was especially an adjustment, I think, for season ticket holders who are at every game, right? And all of a sudden, you show up on a Sunday night, and all of a sudden, the Sens are wearing white. But what's more is the Carolina Hurricanes, if you were to look at all the jerseys in the NHL, all the home jerseys, Carolina's probably looks the most like the Ottawa Senators. So yeah, seeing Carolina in their blacks against the Sens in white at the Canadian Tire Center was probably a little weird for the local side in the early going, but not as weird as how the game ended. The Sens were, again, starting to win us over, starting to convince us that they're figuring out defensive details, learning how to win. They had a nice three-game winning streak, and they're going fine for about 40 minutes or 39 minutes against Carolina, and then defensive details went completely out the window. Maybe it's a case of they played the night before and they kind of ran out of gas mentally, but watching Seth Jarvis with 20 seconds left in the second period in a tie game come off the boards, takes a shot, and it's pretty harmless. Puck ends up on the other side of the ice, and as he moves towards the net, they roll out the red carpet for the guy. Like, every Senator defender skated away from Seth Jarvis, and he was like, oh, this is great. And he went right to the net, got a pass back, scored what turned out to be the game-winning goal. Defensive details, Greg, out the window.
Yeah, and we cannot be using the "they played last night" excuse. Carolina played the night before, right? Carolina had the comeback, the awesome comeback against the blue team in Toronto on Saturday night. It's separating the have from the have-nots. It's separating the upper echelon from the also-rans of the NHL. This is a team in Carolina who have some pride, a pride of performance. And up to that point, they, let's be honest, were the Senators really playing really, really well? Or was it just maybe Carolina was having an off night that allowed the game to be as close as it was after two or late into the second period? To me, it was just Carolina was not playing well, and they kind of sort of woke up and said, wait a minute, we're the Carolina Hurricanes. We're a top five team in the NHL. We're a Stanley Cup contender. This is not acceptable to us. And they came out for the third period and proved it to people that they are the better team by far. Judging by the evidence of the third period, they are by far the better team. I think that it was just a matter of pride in Carolina's case.
I'll tell you why I bring in the night before, because yeah, both teams played the night before, but when things go sideways for a team, that's when you really test how empty your tank is. And we say it again and again, like the team that scores near the end of a second period, man, I bet the winning record there is pretty damn good. And you also have to factor in goaltending. So Carolina gets the momentum from that goal, but by the third period, they come out and they score in the first three goals. Yeah, they were good shooting positions and things, but man, this team just needs to get some saves on top of everything else. Like that just, and again, I Forsberg was screened on one, and these were really high danger areas, but I don't know. It just seems like other teams' goalies come up with those big saves at the right time.
Probably another factor of winning teams, of upper echelon teams. It's not necessarily, you can't the old fashioned stat of looking at shots and factoring save percentage. It's not the same thing as looking at high danger chances, slot shots, who's shooting from where. There's so much more that goes into it. Just giving up, you can give up 50 shots and still probably win a game, depending on how dangerous they are. But you're absolutely right. It just seems like this team doesn't seem to get a big game-stealing save, right? Or when they do, it seems to be wasted a lot of nights, too. I thought over the course of the three-game winning streak, though, they got pretty darn good goaltending and won all three games. And then Forsberg basically laid an egg, actually the whole team probably in the third period. But a couple saves early in the third period, it might have been a different outcome, right? That's what you're alluding to, I think. If they'd started the third a little stronger, maybe you get a different outcome.
Yeah, and I'm alluding to the fact, too, again, back to the thought about, you know, you both played the night before, and when things go sideways, as it did at the end of the second period, Carolina get, you know, they're both on fumes at this stage as they enter the third period. But one of the team gets something good happen to them and they can, you know, squeeze a little more juice out of their energy tanks, whereas the other team tends to go, I feel like that had at least a little bit of a hand in it. But, man, I'm starting to wonder if the team really has figured out its defensive details. It's just, you know, when they're going good, we say, you know, oh, the Jacques Martin system is working and they're learning defensive details. They're just as streaky as they've always been, as they were under DJ Smith.
Yeah,
this is exactly how they behaved under DJ Smith in the second half of seasons. Long spells where they're going good, and then all of a sudden, what happened here? Like I look at that Dmitry Orlov goal that I think was the first goal of the hockey game. The Sens had four players at the goal line or deeper. Like Giroux was the only guy of the four Senators who were down in the Carolina zone who was not below the goal line, but he himself, he was maybe a foot and a half off the goal line. Four guys down low like that, and talk about easy pickings coming the other way in transition. I think it was Koliakovo in the TSN first intermission. He highlighted Thomas Chabot deciding that I'm going to go behind the Carolina net when there's already three forwards down near the goal line. It's just, come on, guys. You got to get that. I mean, I just don't think they're there yet. I think that the improvements under Jacques Martin, honestly, have been marginal. It's the same team.
Yeah, the number one thing that the Senators do consistently is play inconsistently.
Right.
That was, you know, and that was evident with their both coaches, both DJ before and now Jacques, talk about being above your check and playing above your check, and that's where three guys below the goal line, it's kind of hard to believe that there's three Carolina Hurricanes between you and the boards, right? And once you lose possession of the puck, one of you's got to wheel out at least one of you, and that was probably the biggest problem in the Carolina game, is their gaps were not right, they weren't up ice, they didn't pressure up ice. Holding the blue line was not strong. Stepping up and standing up at center ice wasn't strong. Guys were not in proper positions to hold up or to be above checks. It was just, everything just seemed to go out the window. And that's like you say, okay, we played last night. I'm kind of tired. All right. I flick a switch to mailing it in. And I kind of just, you know, shut her down for the night. That might've been part of it, but it's just, that can't happen. We can sit here and say, yeah, you know, it's understandable. Okay, it's understandable. That doesn't mean it's acceptable. And that's part of the, you know, that's a fine line between understandable and acceptable. And this team seems to always got away with things that were unacceptable. Not so much anymore. I'm sure they got an earful and had a real good video session after that game. There were lots of things to show that required correction and lots of teachable moments in that game. It's just, they're just inconsistency. It's just killing them.
Yeah. I'm more and more of the opinion, I've been of the opinion for a while now, but I'm more and more convinced that the play is to really grab that roster and shake the tree.
It's coming.
It's got to happen, I think. Because coaching may have played a role in it. I don't think there's any question about that. But now you've had Jacques Martin come in, and it hasn't changed that much. So I think that personnel needs to change, removal of a bit of the sameness to bring in something different that they lack. And that will make things all the easier for the next coach to change the culture. I'm absolutely certain now that the roster has to have some pretty significant changes. And you know, when you talk about the next coach, you know, it really doesn't feel like it's going to be a guy like Craig Berube, or it might have happened already. Because I think maybe if you look at the team right now, I don't know for sure. I can't get in their heads or anything, but maybe there's still a bit of that. they know that Jacques Martin is not going to be their coach moving forward, and maybe there's less of a buy-in because of that. Mm-hmm. And it really feels like they really have their eye or their heart set on somebody who's busy right now, who's got a job, he's got to finish out the year, and they'll hire him in the summer. And do you think it might be John Gruden? Because this team has been quite predictable with its, you know, Andlauer connections, and the former Hamilton Bulldogs coach certainly seems like a possibility in that area.
And John Gruden was a name that you and I discussed. He was the first name that we discussed way back when we first started talking about who's the next coach here. It's not what I want. I know it's not what you want. We want a proven NHL coach. Like, this franchise historically doesn't do that. I just think that's what's required. Now, having said that, I don't want a proven NHL coach as some guy who's got some wins because he had great rosters and was just a figurehead. I want a guy who can teach, right? Like, that's the other thing. I don't know if Craig Berube is a coach who's a teacher, or if Craig Berube's just a motivator guy. I just think it's important that whoever it is able to teach the game at the same time. But having said that, the guy that's got to teach these players, he needs to be somebody with credentials for the players to respect and buy in and do what's required. You need somebody with that resume. He's a winner. He's coached somewhere else in this league. He's got a 10 years of NHL head coaching experience. That gives you automatic, the buy-in comes quicker. The buy-in comes from the day of the announcement versus, 3 weeks into training camp when the players go, hey, you know what? Maybe this guy does know what he's talking about. You'll get much quicker, much better buy-in right off the bat with a name, but a name who could teach, with a name who commands respect, with a name who is demanding of these players. Maybe they even need a hard ass, Steve. Like, how would that go over? Like, what would happen if Mike Keenan showed up, or a Mike Keenan type? Maybe that's what's required. I don't know.
I mean, I think everything's on the table right now, but I do feel confident in that, to your point about a guy with experience. Like, I would feel that way. I felt that way more in the Melnick years, because I felt like the coaches he was hiring were just like, is he cheap? I feel now with Andlauer and company that it could be a seasoned guy or a younger guy. I feel like they're looking for the guy that they think is going to do the best job, and the guys they trust and things like that. And so I don't feel like they're coming at it from that perspective. What did Eugene Melnick say when Bruce Boudreau was potentially up for the job at about $4 million? He was like, does he walk on water? So if it was still the Melnick years, oh my God. But if it were still the Melnick years, I would say, you know what? Throw some money at a proven commodity, because you don't know what you're doing. Now I have at least some faith that if they do go in the inexperienced direction, there is a chance they could pull some young guy out of the mix who hasn't gotten the NHL experience, and he could still be good. You know, the way Chris Knobloch is in Edmonton right now. Like, I didn't know that guy existed until he replaced, what's his name?
Jay Woodcroft.
Thank you. Until he replaced Jay Woodcroft in Edmonton. So he's done pretty well, this just in. So we'll see.
Attention truck enthusiasts, are you ready to experience the power, performance, and innovation of a legendary vehicle? Look no further than the 2023 Ford F-150 at Jim K. Ford. We have incredible deals and financing options tailored just for you. Visit Jim K. Ford today and experience the thrill of driving the best-selling truck in Canada, the 2023 Ford F-150. Visit us at 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans, or at jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
Hey, if you like a nice drink with family and friends, I'd like to recommend a nice bottle of Beaver's Dram Premium Canadian Whiskey. Imagine a nice whiskey with less bite and more flavor, that's soft and warm with subtle flavors of orange and dark chocolate and a hint of sherry in there too. Pick up a bottle of Seven Seals Beaver's Dram Premium Canadian Whiskey today at the LCBO, or order online at DunrobinDistilleries.com. But anyway, I can't believe how much coaching talk we had there. We didn't even project to talk about that in the outset, but let's talk about the good though, because there was some good on the weekend as well. The Sens came back to beat the New York Islanders 4-3. Brady Tkachuk with a hat trick, and man, he got three perfect passes in that game as well. One from Batherson on the backhanded sauce that sent him in on a breakaway. Stützle on the power play getting him twice in the slot. I don't know what the Islanders are doing. He gets Stützle to Tkachuk in the slot. He's wide open, takes a shot, hits the post. Puck comes right back to Stützle, and there's Tkachuk, wide open again, gets it again, and this time scores. And he had another great pass later in the game as well for his third. So the interesting thing about Brady Tkachuk, as you revisit his draft year in 2018, how many people were saying, oh, I don't know about that guy, though. He's only got 8 goals at Boston University. And here we are right now, Greg, his third straight 30-goal year with that hat trick.
I think that anybody who was talking about or still wants to look back at his BU days and say, you know, this is incredible. Where did this come from? He wasn't that type. You wouldn't have expected this. I think you didn't understand what type of player Brady Tkachuk is and what right. type of game they play in the NCAA. Brady Tkachuk was an NHL power forward playing in a league that doesn't really play that kind of style, right? There's not a lot of that type of player in the NCAA. It's much more of a skill-based league and a speed game, and it's totally different. So it almost makes sense. It did make sense at the time that Brady wasn't scoring a ton of goals or racking up a lot of points because he just wasn't really fitting in properly within the program that is an NCAA program. So he's looked good 3 years at 30 goals in a row. Three years in a row with 30 goals is impressive no matter what team, no matter what league, no matter when you were drafted. That's impressive.
Yeah. He's one of those guys you win Stanley Cups with. I firmly believe that. You could use, you know, a couple more of him. Not that there's many of him out there, but, you know, then you look up and down the roster and you see some other guys that maybe have, you know, some skill out there, but you put in your mind's eye, you know, think about all the Stanley Cup playoff hockey that you've watched over the years and how many of these battles, you know, in conference finals and going to overtime and Stanley Cup game sevens, like that is not for the faint of heart. That is not the realm of kids who are 20, 21 years old. Like that's man's hockey. And that's really what the Sens and you know, even in the regular season, it's man's hockey is going to be the difference between winning and losing a lot of nights because it's a grind to get through the 82 games. You can win a bit with skill, no doubt, but the Sens obviously needed an injection of more of that Brady Tkachuk style on their roster.
It's one of the few things that has not changed. Many, 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 many things have changed in the National Hockey League. Team building and roster building and types of players and the type of game that they play. But one thing that has not changed is that those types of players are required. You go all the way back to the 70s. I mean, you talk about Bobby Orr and Phil Esposito and those Bruin teams that were setting scoring records. Okay, well, Wayne Cashman and Ken Hodge weren't exactly the opponents. You had some big, tough guys. They were the big, bad Bruins for a reason. You had the Flyer teams with all their tough guys. You had the Island, your Hab teams, guys like Yvon Lambert and Mario Tremblay weren't exactly skilling it up out there. And Dougie Risebrough, guys like that.
Larry Robinson.
Yeah, you had big, physical men that showed up in the playoffs and played that style of game. The Islander teams, you had Tinelli and Nystrom and the Sutter brothers and Clark Gillies, you know, all the way right up to the most recent Stanley Cup champions. Those types of players are required to win. And the more of them you have, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah. And the softer skill guys, even them being older, matters as well. Mentally tough, understanding what you need to do without the puck. It's not just a YouTube dangle fest. It's so much more than that. And so like a Connor McDavid right now, I'm at a stage now where I think Connor McDavid is really now going to start thriving because he's now a veteran in the league. You know, he's not a kid anymore. That's just uber skilled. I think these next 5 years for the Edmonton Oilers, I think they're going to have a lot of fun in the postseason with Connor McDavid really, really coming of age. Like he's a man now. And So it matters age-wise, even for the skill guys who aren't sort of the bull in a china shop types that really matter come the postseason. Finishing it up today, the NHL GM meetings are on. And they're talking about some interesting things. And one of them, one of the big ones is, should video review extend to other things? I'm of the opinion I'd like to start seeing video review contraction, not expansion. Where are you?
I'm with you. I don't need video review offsides. Just go away.
Thank you.
You know that I understand the fans out there, the people. It's the just get it right people, right? There's a whole whack of a contingent of fans who are, oh, it's okay as long as it takes. Who cares? As long as they get it right, you people can just go away. The only part you need to get right is whether the puck went across the goal line or whether it was a high stick or whether it was a hand pass. You know, other than that, around the net, goals, yes. That, get it right. I agree with you totally. All the rest of that crap, I don't need any of that stuff.
I feel like it's an admission of error to some degree when they're talking about expanding it, because they're basically admitting there are a bunch of violations that could occur prior to a goal being scored. And that's been my point all along about the offside challenge.
Right.
That of all, you know, of all the violations you can think of that happen before a goal is scored, why is offside, you know, this hill you're going to die? Like, not offside. Sorry. We're still going to try and call offside with the human eye, with the linesman trying to call it as honestly as they can. And there have been very few egregious, as it like, advantage attacking team, and they went in and scored because they were way offside. That almost never happens. Like, almost never happens. And yet that's the one, that's the hill they're going to die on. That's the violation that they've got to watch for 5 minutes after a goal is scored. And they're going to strip that goal off the board because of a millimeter offside. It's crazy to me. And for them today to be, we want to expand it to other things because there's so many other things out there. Yeah, exactly. And there are plenty more serious things you could have been challenging all the way along. But let's be honest, we're going to get to a stage where all we do is go to video. Like, it'll be, you know, we have, you know, great D-zone setup. D-zone coverage is very important. But the video review guy shouldn't be part of your defense in that you challenge every goal that is scored against you. And I feel like we're heading to that place, and spontaneous celebration and the joy of the moment is going to be stripped from fans. So I want to see less replay and not more. And that's certainly something that they've been bandying about in their little small groups on Monday. Tuesday, they move into bigger groups to talk about things. And that's the big one that everybody's talking about.
Well, the offside, the offside one, you blame it all on Matt Duchene. If that goal didn't happen, the Matt Duchene, when he was about, 7 feet offside, if that goal didn't happen, it may have eventually come up, but it wouldn't have come up as fast as it did with offside reviews. And as to the point of the rules and sticklers for rules, if they start expanding, get out an NHL rule book and look at a face-off alignment. If your stick's not allowed in that circle, your toe's not allowed in the circle, can I back up after a goal and say, hey, that guy was inside the circle on the face-off. That shouldn't have been dropped. Puck should have never been dropped. That's no goal. Like, be careful what you wish for if you start going down that road of enforcing every single rule and allowing video review of every single rule, because there's rules that just kind of get sloughed off and they don't care about them. And those things start creeping in. You're in trouble then.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, football, they say offensive holding happens almost every play. If you reviewed, you know, close up and slow motion, you'll find one. Absolutely, you'll find one. You'll see a guy just gripping onto the jersey on the wrong side of the outside of the shoulder. And the same thing is true of, you know, if you got a good, you got a team of video review guys, not just one, but, you know, they've got, you know, 5 different cameras on the go up there, and they'll immediately see something. And, oh, we just got scored on, but I noticed that this guy, you know, might have been a hooking call. We might want to have a look at that. And it just, it will get to the absurd stage at some point. So, but moving on to other things.
Yeah.
They say right now the stat that was out there is that 70% of extra time games end in overtime versus the shootout. So out of 10, well, people understand what 70% means.
I don't know if they're listening to us, we're not sure.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, I'll say it. Okay, if there's 10 extra time games, 7 of them are currently on average ending in the overtime session in the 3-on-3. And if it stays that way, that would be an NHL record. So despite the fact we're, you know, there's people talking about changes to the 3-on-3, I'd like to see this or that, it's accomplishing its goal in 7 out of 10 cases. But if you could change something about 3-on-3 overtime, what would it be?
It would be the over and back. And I think we're in total agreement on this. You're not allowed to leave the offensive zone, or or maybe you go slowly, you go in stages. You know, the first step, the rule is you can't cross center ice. After you cross center ice, you can't go back again. Maybe that you start with that, or after you cross the blue line, you can't go back over center. But eventually I think you should get to, if you're inside the zone, you can't come outside the zone. That would create more turnovers. That would create more transition offense chances the other way. I think that's the way to go. And that seems to be the one amongst most fans. But I would also say to you right now, if 70% of these games are settled in overtime right now, do they really need to tinker with it? Like, what's wrong with it? What, do you want it to be 100? Do you want it to be 80? You know, what number does it have to be at for you to say, yeah, that's good, we don't need to touch it? I'm kind of surprised if they think they need to make changes when they're at 70% right now.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, but I'll also throw in that the change I would make would just be, I don't care how you get there, I want more.
Yeah,
I'll really watch 3-on-3 overtime, and I'm so often almost dumbfounded as I watch 3-on-3 overtime about how truly exciting it is by comparison. You know, I just watched three periods of, you know, regulation action, and it was pretty good. And then the 3-on-3 starts, I'm like breathless in my excitement level of it. Don't you want a lot of that if you're selling a product? This is a business after all. And don't we want to maybe extend it to the 10-minute mark? And if that's a problem, like it's too long, well, you know, go ahead and end the game and then end the third period after 15 minutes. I just want more 3-on-3. However you get there, I don't care. But it is staggering how much more entertaining it is than the 2.5 hours of hockey I had just finished watching. That's why I want more.
Yeah, but don't be disparaging that 2.5 hours. It's still pretty good.
It is, like, but
we love watching a hockey game, right? I love watching a hockey game. I don't care what the score is or what the situation is. I love watching hockey. 3-on-3, yeah, I'm good with that. But I think you got to be careful because the World Championships goes to 3-on-3 in 20-minute periods, right? Their real overtime is 20-minute periods of 3-on-3. And you get past a certain point and it kind of slogs up and turns into a slugfest, right? Go back to the Connor Brown, Nick Paul thing. Remember that game? That was well past the 5-minute mark of 3-on-3 at the Worlds. So be careful because sometimes you watch a 3-on-3 overtime and yeah, there are nights when it's just woom, 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 woom. They're back and forth all over the place. But then there's other nights where it's a real boring, like what are they doing? They're constantly going back and back and back and then there's no shots. You see both types of it. I think that if it was extended longer, I think you might get some boring. There might not be as exciting, Steve. And then it becomes, at the start of it now, it's like, okay, let's not get carried away because this thing could go on for a while. So we can't exactly start guns a-blazing. So then it would just get worse and worse. That's my only sort of negative look on the thing.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be the kind of thing you try. And the East Coast Hockey League has gone to 7 minutes for their overtime. So that's a great spot to try things out. But I really feel like not one fan even in a mediocre 3-on-3, not one fan is ever going, oh, thank God that's over. Now we can get to the 3-on-3 shootout. I think people, generally speaking, want to see it decided in live fire action and not the skills competition. With that, we shall call it a day, ladies and gentlemen. Boy, we appreciate you being here. You guys are all right. You're all right. If you want to contact us, please do so. SensNationHockey@outlook.com, our email address there. And then, of course, we've got our website. That is SensNationHockey.com. Greg, enjoy your week, and we shall talk to you soon.
Yep, for sure. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for being with us on the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. Share the show with your friends and followers, or become a member on Patreon. Check out our website today at SensNationHockey.com.